Hello and welcome to the Healthy Balanced Birth and Beyond podcast. I'm Olivia, your host, and on this podcast, we will talk about everything related to the journey to conceive, pregnancy, labor, birth, postpartum, parenthood, and beyond. This is a safe space where birth professionals, birthing people, expectant parents, and partners can come on and share their knowledge or personal experiences with our listeners. The goal of this podcast is to create connections, share stories, information, and resources to educate and empower people in their own personal journey. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Healthy Balanced Birth and Beyond podcast. Today, I have one of my friends with us today. Her name is Annie. And Annie and I connected, gosh, I don't even know how long ago, a while ago. And Annie makes some non-toxic cleaning products for the home. And then from there, Annie and I just kept talking and going back and forth. And we realized how much we had to connect and talk about, whether it was something to do with non-toxic cleaning or something to do with motherhood. So I'm super excited to have her on today. Annie, welcome to the show, and tell everybody a little bit about you.
My name is Annie, and I'm a founder of a non-toxic cleaning product called Annie's Pure and Simple, which really developed out of having four children. And I met Olivia before you even had your baby.
I know.
At the SOA Fia. What is it? SOA Festival?
SOA in Boston.
Market, yes. And that's when I met you, and then followed you through your pregnancy and your nursing and all of that. And that's how we've been connected through Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah, and Annie's is like the only thing that I use to clean in our house. Like literally for absolutely everything, the floors, the counters, the bathroom, like everything.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
So yeah, we're definitely going to spend some time talking about that just so everybody can learn more about the products that you make. But I do want to spend some time talking about, today we're going to be talking about breastfeeding because one of the things that Annie had reached out to me about, I think you were commenting on my stories or something like that, was about breastfeeding and about how there's such a lack of support for mothers in terms of mothers who want to breastfeed. So would you mind telling us a bit about like your own personal experience growing up and then your experience as a mother?
Sure. I grew up, my mother nursed, I'm one of five, and my mother nursed all four of us. My older sister was not nursed. It wasn't fashionable at the time. She was bottle fed. But my mother always looked upon it as an economical means to save money. And she felt that women were given breasts to feed their babies. So I have two younger siblings, and that it was just very common in my house to see my mother nursing. She would be nursing while she was cooking, or the poor woman really never had time to sit down, but yet she'd nurse in the car. So for me growing up, it was just very natural to see that. When I had my first baby, I had a very traumatic birth, and it never dawned on me that I wouldn't nurse. It was just something that I was going to do because my mother did it.
Right.
And I had a lot of support. I was in a real maternity hospital. It was called St. Margaret's in Dorchester.
Okay.
And it was just a maternity hospital. So you had a lot of support. The nurses would come in and they would just like help you. I had a cesarean section. And, you know, it is painful, you know, the first couple of days, but they'd get right in there and they'd take your nipple out and, you know, and they put it in the baby's mouth. And that was so important to me.
Okay.
There was you couldn't have any modesty in this hospital. You know, they just were wonderful. And they would come in all the time and they would just sit with you and they would talk with you. And it's probably very similar to what my daughter had when she had her baby.
I was gonna say, that sounds like so refreshing compared to some of the stories that I've heard from family, friends, and like clients that I've worked with about the nursing and the nurses after the fact. It's nice to hear that you had nurses that would come sit and talk to you and just make you feel comfortable.
Yeah, I think the nurses were really doing nursing back then. They didn't have a lot of paperwork. My daughter's a nurse down in Georgia, and she says there's just so much paperwork to do. And I think at the time, this hospital, you know, it was totally geared towards women. And this is a really funny story, because I used to see the women walking down, you know, the corridor and going into the smoking room. They used to have smoking rooms where the mothers could go and smoke.
Oh my God.
Believe it or not. Dude, I mean, it's unheard of today. Right?
Yeah, of course. They
did. And if you wanted to go down and see other moms, it was like a community room where everybody was smoking.
Yeah.
You could even smoke in your room.
Oh my gosh.
How crazy is that, right? How crazy is that?
I mean, it's crazy to think about from that perspective. Like, obviously, we all now know that smoking is not good for you. But it's nice to hear that there was, like, this sense of community, because I think, like, what you were talking about when you first started talking about breastfeeding, like, you watched your mother breastfeed, and it just wasn't even something that you thought about not doing when you went to have your own children. And I feel like now, as a society, I recently was talking about this on Instagram. I feel like now, as a society, breastfeeding has become like so sexualized, and like some people are like shamed for doing so. And for me, it's like we should not have to normalize something that is so natural. Like, this is literally what women have been doing since they started giving birth.
It's crazy,
but it's so nice to hear that you saw your mother doing it. And then because of that, it was just something that came like second nature to you. And I think because of how far our society has come, like removed from what's so natural and normal, it's kind of just like people are kind of super nervous to try and breastfeed, or they don't have the support when they want to breastfeed because people will just tell them, oh, just take a bottle. They can just do a bottle. But if they want to do that, then they should be supported in doing so. And like you said, like it's so nice to hear that you saw your mom doing those things, because I feel like that's what I've been doing. Like, I'd be cooking, I'd be cleaning, and she's just like hanging on my boob nursing.
Me too.
But a lot of the time, that's not viewed as like the norm, in air quotes, which is so crazy to me.
It's crazy. I also had an aunt, my mother's sister, who had 8 children, and I watched her nurse her children. And she had my mother, and it was my Aunt Ruth. They were kindred spirits when it came to nursing, because there were four daughters, and 2 of them nursed and 2 of them didn't. And Ruth and Betty, that was my mom's name. I remember at a Thanksgiving dinner, they had children born a couple of days apart.
Aww.
And so at this Thanksgiving dinner, they were nursing, and it was, you know, the rest of the family would, you know, be getting them things, you know, what can I get you, a glass of water, a cup of tea or something like that.
Yeah.
So that it was so normal, even though I did a little research saying during the 80s, only 50% of women breastfed.
Right.
And I didn't know anybody else that did. I was the only one.
Really?
And I had a really, I think, difficult first 6 months. I was isolated from my family. I'd moved like an hour and a half away. Mm-hmm. My husband was going to school at night and working all day. And I was just at home with this baby that wouldn't stop crying.
Yeah.
And my mom would come out like once a week, and we'd talk on the phone. And it was really helpful, but there were times that I just thought that I just was, you know, going to throw them out the window.
I know. And I think that's the part of postpartum and parenthood and motherhood that mothers don't want to talk about, or they're afraid to talk about it because they don't want to like scare other mothers. And I think for so long, people didn't talk about it. And now more people are talking about it. And I think it's a good thing, because I can totally relate. My daughter came early. Earlier than we thought she was going to. I knew she was coming early, but I didn't know how early, obviously. Mm-hmm. And my husband still had work to tie up. He was just working nonstop. So it was just like, I think that we definitely could have planned for postpartum better. And like you said, if you don't have family or friends around, it can be really difficult when you're by yourself and you feel like you want to get out of the house, but all your baby's doing is crying, or they just pooped up their back or whatever it is.
Yeah, and you're just leaking and bleeding and just everything is coming out of everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I always thought it would be really wonderful if, and I'm sure some people have this in their life, but a group of grandmothers, maybe like, you know, two or three grandmothers that came in to your home after you had a baby and took care of you.
Yeah.
You know, just lay down, rest. Because today you're in and out of the hospital so quickly.
Yeah.
You don't have time to really even think about it. I think it's such a whirlwind experience. Mm-hmm. My third child, I had, I was in the hospital for 10 days.
Mm. Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, she had an infection and I had an infection. We ended up staying there for 10 days, but, all of the other births, I was there for at least 5 days.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I hate saying it, but when, before having my daughter and before I studied to become a doula, I remember watching The Business of Being Born, which, have you watched that? Have you heard of it?
Uh-uh.
So it's essentially a movie / documentary that just talks about how our healthcare system is like a business and they want to get people in and out of the hospital. And it sounds horrible. And I do think that our healthcare system has a lot of work to do in regards to individualized care and making sure that mothers are taken care of and they're not just rushed out, not knowing or not having the support that they need. But I so agree. I was literally just having this conversation with my mom the other day about like what you just said, having like your family around you, just like going and having your family around you and helping you, whether it's like holding the baby so you can take a shower or holding the baby so you can eat breakfast. It's just, it's crazy to me because if you look at different cultures, like in other countries, they literally like don't let the mother do anything for like 40 days.
That's wonderful.
They let the mother, they take over all of her duties, anything, all of her responsibilities, anything that they have to, that she has to do. So literally all she has to do is rest and eat food and take care of her baby, like breastfeed them, whatever she wants to do. And it's just crazy that we live here in America and that's just not even a discussion. And then like people don't even get maternity leave and people are going back to work 2 weeks after having a baby. It's
just incredible. Fortunately, I didn't have to go back to work. So I was able to stay and, you know, take care of him. And, but 18 months later, I had another baby.
Okay.
And I wasn't really finished nursing this baby yet. I nursed my kids really late. So I did tandem nursing.
Oh, did you? Oh my God. I would love to hear about that.
Yeah. Of course, it was a secret. I had to keep it a secret because people thought I was, even my own family thought it was a little odd. But I belonged to a group called the Leche League.
Oh, yeah. I love the Leche League. Yeah.
And it was a little community of women where I lived. And we used to meet once a month and have coffee and, you know, cakes and stuff. They were so supportive. Mm-hmm. They were a wonderful group of women that I looked forward to every month, and everything goes. They used to have house meetings.
Yeah.
And so you joined like your local chapter. And I think actually my mother had suggested that I join it because I really didn't have a lot of like friends where I was. And they were wonderful and they were all like, everybody was different. And that's what was great about it. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a group, a couple of women that did tandem nursing that supported me in that.
So can I ask, you mean you kept it a secret that you were tandem nursing? I just wanted to make sure.
Yes.
Okay. Because you felt like people wouldn't be supportive of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I felt that, people would think that he was too old.
Okay.
He was, you know, he was 17 months and that people would think like, that's crazy. What are you doing this for? You know?
Yeah.
And I did it. I mean, I did it and it ended up that, my daughter that was born, she ended up being very sick. and had RSV.
Oh, she did.
So she was put, she was very sick, and she was put into the hospital in intensive care for a month.
Oh my goodness.
And so it's so interesting what had happened at this hospital. It used to be called Boston Floating Hospital, mm-hmm. but now it's Tufts.
Okay.
It's over on over in the
like Longwood area.
No, it's over by Chinatown.
Oh.
The South End. Yeah.
Oh, the South End. Okay.
Yeah, but it was more towards Chinatown. And so they asked me, you know, did you nurse? And I was like, yeah. And so they were the first ones, that the first time I ever saw a breast pump. And they wanted me to pump all the milk for her.
Okay.
And then asked me if I would donate my milk. I had a lot of milk. Would I donate it to other babies mm-hmm. that were there? Mm-hmm. And they tested it and, you know, did all of that.
Right.
And there was another baby that was, don't really know what she had, but I do remember her name was Amber. Mm-hmm. And they told me that she was missing an enzyme in her chemistry.
Okay.
And that she had all these sores, like, all over her. And she was in, she'd been in, like, foster care, or she was going into foster care. And they had asked me if I would nurse her.
Oh, my goodness.
When I went in to visit Elizabeth, because mm-hmm. I couldn't nurse Elizabeth.
Because she was so sick.
Failure to thrive. She was like, she was almost a year old, but she only weighed like 8 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
And so, I know, it's really. And they asked me when I came in, because I would just sit by, you know, Elizabeth's little cot. Mm-hmm. And then one nurse, I mean, it was different then. They were like, would you hold this baby? And, you know, you're here all day. And, you know, would you, if I can get permission, would you nurse her? Mm-hmm. And I was like, sure, absolutely. Yeah. So I had this little bond with Amber.
That's such an incredible story.
Yeah. She did pass away, though. Oh. She passed away after that. Yeah. I think they just didn't really want to tell me that. Actually, what I think that she had is, I think she had AIDS. I think HIV. I think she, and at the time it was still new.
Yeah.
But it was a very sad story. She was a cute little thing, but yeah.
What year was that, if you don't mind me asking?
That was 1983.
1983. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to like hear, like, you're talking about how different the hospitals were, how different the healthcare system it was compared to now. And I love hearing that they asked you then if you would donate mm-hmm. your milk, because a lot of people don't realize, like, a lot of people who say they're struggling with breastfeeding or they're not producing enough milk, they don't realize that there is the option to have donor milk. Mm-hmm. So hearing that it was around then, and then people still don't know about it like now, I mean, it's awesome that it was around then. And you're right. Like, things were so different than they are now.
Yeah. And my cousin, she had a baby the same year, just a few weeks before I did. And they had asked me, did I know anybody else that nursed that would be willing to donate milk? And so we had our own little refrigerator. And so she donated her milk as well.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, like, it really, really does. And I think so many people, we have this, like, this, I don't even know the proper word for it, like, this idea in our minds of, like, we have to do everything as moms, like, here. Whereas in reality, like we've been talking about, if we had, like, that support, we would be able to do so much more. be able to feel so much better about being a mother and not feeling, like, ashamed, like, we're not doing enough. Because, I mean, no matter what you do, if you are a working mom, if you're a stay-at-home mom, like, it is still so much. And we just truly need to have more support. And I talk about it all the time with, like, my friends. Most of my friends don't live in the state. They live out of state. And so I was the first one out of our group of friends to have a baby. And now my friend Megan has her daughter. And my other friend Kelsey is about to have her daughter in January. And I just talk about like how nice it would be if we could just live in like a commune, like all of
us. Wouldn't that be nice? And, I always say that. Yeah.
Yeah. And just like, yes, if somebody needs to sleep, the other person takes the kids. If someone wants to go to work, the other person takes the kids. Like, it would just be, it would be such a nice thing to have, especially.
Like sister wives.
Yeah.
It's just like sister wives.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's, yeah, just, I mean, what it comes down to, based on like everything that we're talking about, is just that I think that mothers need more support. And I think that there needs to, mm-hmm, this stigma that mothers need to do everything and not complain about anything and not talk about how hard things are, just really needs to go out the window.
Yes. And then go and work.
Right.
And you have enough work taking care of one child.
Right.
You know, two children.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring up too, is that, when I was pregnant with my third, mm-hmm, I really wanted to have a VBAC birth.
Oh, okay.
And this all was attributed to Lalaysia League women who really supported that.
Okay.
Now, there was a book out at the time called Silent Knife.
Oh, I have that book. I have
Love
it.
Love that book.
Love it.
So great. Great. And I tried a VBAC with my third. I had a very a wonderful doctor who would be willing to do it. And it failed.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't fail. It just didn't work for me.
Yeah. I don't want you to think that you failed, though.
I know. But I did go on to have a fourth, mm-hmm, and I did do a VBAC.
Oh, wow. Hearing, yeah, stories like that is so amazing.
Yeah. And it was quite interesting. The doctor, he was so wonderful and so experienced. And he wasn't afraid. And at the time, everyone else you went to said, no,
yeah,
no, you have already had three sections.
Yeah.
We're not, your uterus could explode. You know what I mean?
Right.
All of these things.
Yep.
And he didn't believe that. He believed that, you know, yeah, you can do this. We're going to watch you very carefully, but you can do this. So with the support of this Lalaysia League group again, they really were important to me at this time, so important. They gave me things to do so that to stay home as long as I could.
During labor.
Because they said, as soon as you go to that hospital, as soon as you start labor, they're, mm-hmm, just going to, boom, stick an IV in you, and they're just going to say, no, failure.
Yeah.
No, she's not dilated, you know, all of these things. So I stayed home all through my labor till I was like 8.5 centimeters.
Wow. Oh my goodness. That's so
and
awesome.
I lived really close to the hospital. It was only a block away.
Okay.
And these women were just so instrumental, telling me things to do. It happened late at night. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And they had given me a list of things because there were a couple of them that had done it as well. And to, you know, take a hot shower, kneel on the stairs,
mm-hmm,
you know, rock back and forth. Don't get into the hospital. A lot of, and actually I took a course in having a VBAC too. And that, mm-hmm, was really instrumental. One of them was to, so funny now, was to squat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, they never did that before.
Oh yeah. You know? No, I mean, I understand that.
I mean, it's crazy. This is 1988 now.
Mm-hmm.
So squatting was not allowed. It was like, we're going to stick a fetal monitor inside you and we're going to do this. So when they brought me to the floor, I was very, very strong at that point. Very, like, no one was going to take this away from me. I felt like a real warrior. I really did.
Good. And, oh my gosh, that makes me so happy.
I really did. I felt like a warrior. Like, the doctor came in and I was like, listen, you got to let me do it my way here. And he's like, oh, jeez. So all I did was ask them if they would let me stand up against the wall,
mm-hmm,
and squat.
Yeah.
And you think I was asking them to give me, I don't know. And one nurse said, absolutely not. You are not getting out of that bed. You are staying in that bed. You're a high-risk pregnancy, da-da-da-da-da. Meanwhile, I'm like 28 years old, okay? 29. And I'm like, you know what? You're getting out of that bed. And a really nice nurse came in, and her name was Rita. And she was really a very, like, large woman. And she said, come on, honey, get out of that bed. I'll hold you while you squat.
Oh, wow. See, that's the type of support you need.
Right. And she was like, when someone else comes in, we're just going to, you know, they didn't even want me walking around. They didn't want me to go to the bathroom. They didn't want anything. So in, you know, looking back, it was a good thing that I went so late. I mean, yeah. maybe I was taking a risk, but she was born less than 2 hours later.
Wow.
So it was really quick and, you know, great. What a difference between a cesarean and, you know, VBAC.
Yeah.
It was good.
And I'm so glad that you shared that, because that was one of the things you and I hadn't talked about. So I didn't know that. I didn't know that that was your experience. And again, like what we were just saying, like, I don't think enough people talk about these things, that you are able to have a vaginal birth after cesarean, which is what VBAC stands for, in case people who are listening don't know. Because like you said, there's a lot of like fear mongering around it, or doctors just won't do it. Or, and then you talk about, you go to the hospital and you're like, this is how I've been laboring. This is what's working for me. And they tell you, no, get in bed. Like those are the instances where A, it's not their body. So they should not be telling you how to labor when you are literally having contractions to have a child. But it's also one of my biggest frustrations is that we think we have to do what the doctors are telling us. And it's not that, it's not saying that doctors don't know what they're talking about. But unfortunately, a lot of the time, doctors and nurses in hospitals have not seen a natural birth. So they don't know what it's like for a person to come in and just labor and not have any medical interventions and give birth to their baby. Like they haven't seen that. They don't know. So they think in their mind, like they've kind of like been trained, like, okay, you give birth in the bed on your back. When in reality, it's crazy. When in reality, there are so many different things, like you said, so many different comfort measures, so many different movements that you can do. And I'm so, it makes my heart happy to hear that that the La Leche League was so supportive of you and you were able to have this VBAC. And the fact that you advocated for yourself. I mean, I don't feel that we should have to do that in general, but the fact that you advocated for yourself, and then you also had Rita coming in who was like, hey, you know what? I heard you say that you want to do this. Let's do it. I'm going to support you. Like, that is what women need. That is what people need when they are giving birth.
They need a Rita.
Yeah, they need a Rita.
Or a doula, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just always puzzles me. Even when my daughter had a section, and you know, it's this failure. The words they use,
failure to progress.
Which to me, if you didn't put them in the hospital so early, maybe people wouldn't, you know, have this problem. And I kept saying to her, what happened is, I think when the water breaks, that's what it is.
Yeah.
She water breaks, and then they're like, oh, you got to go to the hospital. You could get an infection.
Right.
You know, daring you again.
Right.
And that's what happened with my third. My water broke, and really that's what, if they had just given me more time.
Right.
I did try to advocate for myself then, but weren't happy.
Yeah. And it's, I'm sorry that that happened. I've heard so many stories, same thing. Like they were just like, well, your baby needs to come out now. And this is part of why I want to open up conversations about like the estimated due date. And then it's okay to go past your due date. You don't need to be induced if your baby doesn't come on your due date. And
that drives me crazy.
Yeah. I mean,
the inductions. Is anyone go into labor anymore without being induced?
I mean, it's it's very frustrating. And then I think that it's kind of like a cascade of how the mother is going to feel, but a cascade of also of medical interventions that lead to cesarean sections that they may not have needed. Like, yes, there are times where you need a C-section if it's life-threatening to the mother. But majority of the time, you don't. And if you just gave your body and your baby the time that they need, then it would be okay. It's just, oh my gosh, it drives me crazy.
I remember there was in one of the, I think in that book, there was a maternity house that you could go to. And I think that would be really cool if there was a birthing center that was just allowing women to labor on their own and, you know, just kind of do their own, let their bodies do their own thing.
Yeah.
And, but now there's just so much medical intervention. And I think a lot of it has to do with lawsuits.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, it's that, and it's also like we talked about, it's like hospitals are businesses. Like there are many, many doctors that are wonderful and that will listen to you. There absolutely are. But I think that there are less of those doctors and more of the doctors that are focused on moving people in and out of the hospital and focused uh-huh. on if there's a holiday or if they have to travel, or I just think that
right.
I think that things need to change because it's negatively impacting mothers and families and babies. Uh-huh.
Oh, definitely baby. In nursing, my youngest was a breeze compared, you know, because I had the VBAC.
Okay.
And I felt great.
Afterwards.
As good as you could feel, you know, as good as I could feel. I mean, and I also had three children under five at home.
Wow.
So yeah, my oldest was five and my youngest was newborn. Crazy.
That's so
and, cool. I think back on it, I was so crazy. It was all very natural to yeah. be able to just take care of her and nurse her. And by this time, I had lived close to my mother, and she was able to come over every day and help me with the kids. And you know, but the nursing after you have a section can be a little bit more frustrating, I think, for
yeah.
women.
Well, yeah, because it's painful, and you have to think about the way that you're going to be holding them, if there's a way that you can get comfortable. I mean, I think that's the other thing, too, is that some people don't realize that C-sections are literally like a major surgery.
Major surgery.
Major yeah. surgery. And like we talked about, like, I can't imagine having a vaginal birth and then being expected to go back to work 2 weeks later because you don't have a long maternity
oh
leave.
Oh, my God.
Let alone if you had a C-section and you had to go back to work. Like, your body has much healing to do.
It needs to rest for a good 6 weeks anyway,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when my daughter did have her section, it was very fortunate for both of us. She lived in walking distance.
Okay.
So I was able to go over every day and help her. And her husband did get paternity leave. So he was there all the time,
That's
which
so
was
nice.
Really, really wonderful. But she was very depressed
yeah.
and it came out a lot in anger.
Yeah, well, and, postpartum rage is a thing that people don't talk about because yeah. they're ashamed of it.
And she just really didn't want my help, really. I mean, wanted the help of, you know, taking care of him, but no help when it came to the nursing.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really know. Things are different now, Mom.
Yeah.
You don't, it's not like it was in your day kind
yeah.
of thing. And yeah, it wasn't. It's just different. So
I think that's something too. That's like a generational thing. Like we don't need your help, Mom, Dad. Like we got it, you know.
Yeah. yeah.
When in reality,
you know, pioneers, you yeah. don't know anything, you know.
When in reality, we could definitely use some help.
yeah, and you know, in other her friends that have had babies, I feel I have been very helpful with them as well with their nursing.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to be one of these people that say, oh, are you going to nurse? You
yeah.
know, because I feel like that puts a lot of pressure on someone.
Yeah.
I just say, oh, you know, what are your plans? You know, and I say, if you ever need any help, just give me a call. You know, we can FaceTime. You know, I said, I've done it four times and I think I'm pretty much a pro at it. And this brings me back to when I was in La Leche League, people, they really taught you how to prepare to
yeah.
nurse.
Yeah.
And I mean, going to like simple things, I mean, your nipples are always so sore.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and they crack and they bleed and it's terrible. And you're like, well, no, no wonder you don't want to nurse. But I don't know if people talk about it now, but like we used to toughen them up.
Yeah.
And one of them was to take a towel.
I've heard this.
And really toughen them up, and then you'd use lanolin or cream on it and things like that. And in my first one, I had a terrible time. But after that, when I was pregnant, I used to just take my towel and really, you know, toughen up my nipples.
I mean, it's crazy to think, but I'm glad that you opened up that part of the conversation, because I think that when it comes to having babies, we prepare for so much. Like, think about like how much money people spend on their wedding, like whether it's like their wedding dress or the venue or all these things. But then when it comes to preparing for giving birth, like the labor portion and getting ready, getting your body ready for that, preparing for what's going to happen, what could happen, what might not happen. But then also opening up the conversation about breastfeeding and how to have that support so you know what you're doing, or so you have a list of people that you could reach out to who can support you in it or tell you what you should or shouldn't be doing, if there's a lactation consultant. Because like you said, a lot of the time people are so worried that they're not going to be able to breastfeed, or B, that it's going to just hurt. And breastfeeding is not supposed to hurt. Like, it all depends on the baby's latch. And it all, like, there are so many different parts of it that go into it. And I think that for me, like you mentioned earlier, in my mind, I was just like, I'm going to breastfeed. It wasn't something that I was like, oh, I'll consider formula or whatever. I was just like, no, I'm going to breastfeed. It's just going to happen. But the thing for me, like, I'm glad that you brought it up. Like I said, I had super sore nipples throughout my pregnancy. Thought like it was ridiculous. Like my nipples had never been that sensitive ever. And it was like, even if I just like put a shirt on or like put my bra over, like, and I was just like, oh my God. So I definitely was like apprehensive about what it was going to feel like. But I think I used this this Earth Mama Organic like nipple butter.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And it was a lifesaver. I just every single time we nursed, I would put that on afterwards, and it's safe for baby. And also too, just like letting your nipples like air dry, like if you can, but that's the thing. It depends.
Letting them out. Let the girls out. You know what I mean? This is what you're supposed to, is for me. This is what I had to do. I used to air dry.
Yeah.
I used to do the towel. I used to do the creams. And also too, for me, there were ways of it not to hurt.
Yeah.
And once again, it goes back to these women that taught. And one of the ways was to actually hold your nipple, okay, and let the nipple part just come out. And then and the pressure of like holding that really did help for me. And so they would give you these like little hints, you know, and they were really important. And I just looked up to see if they were still around.
They are
a big organization, I guess.
Yes, they're a very big organization. And so what I'll do is, I'm so glad that you talked about that. So I'll include the link for the book that you talked about, the Silent Knife book. And then I'll also include a link for the La Leche League so people can go and they can check it out.
Yeah, that's a good one. And I think that when I nursed, throughout nursing, I would say, especially like my last two, I think people were just like, why? Like I would literally go into friendlies with my three kids and a baby.
Yeah.
And I always wore something, you know, you put the receiving blanket, they had the, you know, the nursing bras. I'm sure they have really good stuff now, but you know, I would always like figure out the clothing I would wear, and then I would nurse, and then I would just stick like the little thing over her head, you know? And so many people would comment like, this isn't the place to do this.
Oh my God.
And I would just be like, oh, please.
Oh, please.
It's right here. And a fourth, I wouldn't even start with me, okay? Because it's just, and my kids were really, I think that's the other thing I wanted to bring up. The, oh, we'll let you decide if you can continue breastfeeding if the baby gains weight.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about the gaining of the weight and going, my God, you go to the doctor so much.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't go to your pediatrician. Your pediatrician saw you in the hospital, and then a couple weeks later you went.
Right.
And then after that, you know, I don't even know. I mean, I know that we did go a lot, but it just seems like, you know, got to go get the baby weighed and, you know.
Yeah, there's just like, I remember, I don't know who was talking about it, somebody that I follow on social media, but they were talking about the fact that our society just has like such an obsession with like weight from birth. Like as soon as you're born, like it's just, your weight is talked about. And it's just, it's silly to me. Like, unless the baby is really, really not thriving, like, unless they are very, very small and they really, really do need intensive care, then there shouldn't be such an obsession with the weight. Because, like, when babies are born, they go from being in your womb and they go from being nourished 24/7 because they're literally attached to you, inside of you. And then once they're born, they have to learn how to nurse. They have to learn how to do these things. So, like, their weight fluctuates. Mm-hmm. And then, so say you give birth and then you go back to the doctors a few days later and they're like, oh my gosh, they're down a couple ounces. And you're just like, then they freak you out. And you're like, well, just give us time. Just give us time. Let it happen naturally. And I'm not saying that, like, we should not be talking about it at all. Like, you definitely should be if there is a concern. But if your baby is happy and they're having regular diapers and they are pooping, peeing, happy, awake, smiling, like, clearly thriving, there's no need for them to just be like, well, you definitely need to consider formula because they're not gaining enough weight. Right. Like, some babies, like, this is what I mean when I'm talking about, like, individualized care. Like, some babies just aren't going to be big babies. They're just not. Like, some babies are just smaller. And it all depends on, like, the mother's breast milk or the formula they use. Like, it's just, I feel like I said, I get frustrated because I feel like we've just moved so far away from, like, what's natural and, like, our motherly instincts. And it's just kills me.
And it's, I know it's convenient to do formula, but for me, I couldn't even imagine waking up in the middle of the night and having to do a bottle.
Yeah.
When I could just roll over, get the baby. I mean, so that's another thing too, is we didn't have, we had a family bed when with my kids and, you know, they come and they go and they, you know, you swap pillows with them or whatever, but I mean, I always had the baby in the room and I always nursed in the bed. It was just easier. I mean, the way I did it. And I was so tired all the time. I couldn't even imagine getting up and like going downstairs and getting a bottle.
Yeah.
Then sit, like, that whole disruption of your sleep.
Right.
And nursing babies do nurse more. And I mean, I think they eat more. And, yeah.
I think
it was just so great to be able to do that.
I love that you shared that because I remember I went through the same thing. I had a pump, but I never, like, actually used the mechanical pump. I had, like, a handheld pump, and I had a haka, which is, like, a little suction to your boob to catch your letdown. But the same thing for me, like, I've talked about it numerous times on the podcast. Like, I had brutal hemorrhoids after birth. And so I couldn't
– me too.
I couldn't imagine getting in and out of bed, waking up fully and, like, not nursing her in bed. Like, it was just like, it felt so natural to do that. And then, like, you go to the doctors and they're like, well, are they in the bed with you? And you're like, I don't know. Should I be telling you that they're in the bed with me? Because again, it's like another thing that's like fear mongering. And if you think about it, like you said, we're already so tired. If you can just take your baby, bring your baby in bed and let them breastfeed, then you can go to sleep and they can nurse and everybody gets sleep. And
they'll let you know if you're going to roll over on them.
Yeah.
They'll let you know. They'll cry.
Right.
To me, I mean, people, they don't bring their babies into the bed. And there was a great book too. It was called The Family Bed. It was probably a little Lacey Lake book because everybody had their kids in their beds. And it just seems so natural to me to have her, to have them in the bed with me.
Yeah.
And it was it. And no one ever asked me if they were sleeping in the bed. But I know that I would tell my daughter, you know, just bring him into bed with you.
Yeah.
You know, and try to nurse him that way. And she would be like, no, the doctor said, no, we can't have him in the bed with us. You know? And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It's just, it's like you said, it's hard, and it's hard, especially when, like, medical professionals are not supportive of something that's natural, or, like, because I think there's a difference between telling somebody not to do something and then also providing them with resources if they want to try something versus if they don't want to try something. So I think that people should be given all of their options, all of the resources, so they can look at it and they can decide. They shouldn't be deciding based on, like, what one person says. And I think that's one of the most important things about motherhood.
Yeah, it's, I really feel, you know, I really feel sad for new mothers now, because I feel they have first of all, they've just gone through this just wonderful experience.
Right.
Or some, it's a wonderful experience.
Yes.
Others, it's not a wonderful experience, but it will be wonderful later on. Mm-hmm. You know? And there's so much pressure from
yes.
social media and what getting your body back. Mm-hmm. And that was the other thing. Nursing never was the thinnest in my whole life because I nursed. I could... Like you burn up like 800 calories a day, you know,
yeah.
I mean, nurse those babies. That's why I nursed my kids till they were like 3 years old. I did have one daughter that nursed, it's interesting. I didn't nurse my other ones till they were three, but, over a year, probably 15 months,
yeah.
18 months. It was only at night before they went to bed. A little
yeah.
comfort, you know?
Yeah.
But she, so this is my daughter, Emily, and she's a nurse in Georgia. And she did not speak until she was 4 years old.
Really?
And it was just, she had a swollen tongue, and they had to go in and give it like a little snip.
Mm-hmm.
But because her tongue was so big, she wasn't able to pronounce any words.
Wow.
There was no name for what this was, as far as I know. But she would, it was very, very sad. She would grunt when she wanted something
mm-hmm.
because she didn't have any words. So she would do like hands, you know, like almost
like sign language.
Yeah. And she would go over to the refrigerator and just go, you know, like milk or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, you know, had her tested, and then she went into a full-time speech program
mm-hmm.
when she was 3 years old.
Yeah.
And she learned to speak some words, and then by the time she was four, she didn't shut up. But one of the reasons why I nursed her till she was three, because I felt she really needed that.
Yeah.
She needed that closeness. She was in a big family. She wasn't getting her needs met through, you know, her voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt, you know, I'm not going to have anybody shame me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I remember one time one of my sisters said, I can't believe you're still nursing her.
Yeah.
You're going to nurse her until she's like five. I go, if I have to, I will.
Well,
absolutely.
So, yeah, that's like, that's, I think that's one of the other questions that also just kind of gets under my skin is when people are like, oh, well, how long are you going to breastfeed for? And I'm like,
forever.
until she wants to, until she's done. It shouldn't.
Yeah. And she'll tell you when she's done.
Oh yeah.
They tell you when they're done. They don't, you know, after a while, no.
Yeah.
But I mean, some of the women in Lalaysia League, they were nursing 4 and 5 year olds
right.
just once a day. And you know, it was a place of no judgment. And when you went to those meetings and you brought your babies with you and you had a larger child nursing, you didn't pass judgment on that woman. And
yeah.
I mean, I thought it was, for me, I was like, well, whatever
yeah.
makes you and your child happy
right.
is fine with me.
And I think that's one of the biggest things about motherhood is that there just needs to be less judgment, less shaming. Just leave each other alone. If like, however you decide to mother is what's going to be best for you and your baby.
And stop thinking that your breasts belong to your partner. Okay? Because
yeah.
they don't. Okay? They don't. I mean, seriously. I remember this, you know, so many memories have popped up in this past week because I was looking through some old pictures of the kids and I thought, oh, I can come up with, you know, something to talk about. And I always have plenty to talk about. But I remember a woman saying to me, well, what about your husband?
Yeah.
I go, well, what about him? Like, what are we all going into the big active, like, sexual beings like we, when we first met?
Right.
I mean, are you crazy?
Right.
I mean, you just had a baby, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
And she was, and another woman said to me, oh, my husband would not allow me to nurse.
Not allow you?
Not allow me.
Yeah.
I'm like,
good luck.
You know. See ya. I don't see those people anymore. I don't even know where they are. But yeah, I mean, it's like shaming. You know, I didn't associate it with anybody who tried to shame me.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's crazy. I think everybody should just
let people do their own thing.
Of mothers.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I agree. I think at the end of the day, people just need to be supportive of mothers and be supportive of their decisions, because it's their baby and it's their choice.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, and I'm so grateful for everything that you had shared about your own journey and your journey with breastfeeding and motherhood and dealing with opinions and other people. I think it will be helpful to the people listening along to this episode, who may have been struggling with that a little bit as a new parent. But the last thing that I wanted to talk about today is just your journey with non-toxic living and then how Annie's was created.
Well, it's been a long journey. When my son was 2 years old, he had really severe cases of these asthma attacks, where he was really too young to even be diagnosed with asthma. But he ended up with a very severe case of asthma and was hospitalized 12 times before he was 2 years old.
Oh my gosh.
It was really terrible. So I thought there's got to be something in what we're eating or in the house or, you know, all of these things. So I started to do research. This is before any type of Google or anything like that.
Right.
And I just found some like old kind of hippie books, I call them, and started reading them and decided to take things like all the carpets out of my house. We lived in a very old house, okay, built in 1858, and it had wood floors. So, you know, we took all the carpets out and we changed the heating system. And I began to, I started we had a big yard and had a big garden. And so
wow.
I introduced the kids to, you know, gardening and, you know, I wasn't working at the time. So there was a lot of free time to do those things, you know,
right.
Garden and, you know, I had a quilting class that I took, things that it's too bad everybody's working all the time because you can do all these things and teach your kids how to do all of these things. So that was my introduction. And then I began to try to cook things organically, but that really wasn't around then.
Okay.
Not like now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And things from the garden, and I would make, you know, homemade, you know, tomato sauce and things like that. And there was this great book, and it came out, I think, in the early 80s, and mm-hmm. it was like a Bible, and it was called The Supermarket Handbook.
Ooh.
And I think it may still be in production.
Okay.
Because it gave you a list of foods in the supermarket that were all natural. Like, for instance, Pettridge Farm cookies.
Mm-hmm.
They'll make those today. And I still believe that they stick to their idea that you don't need to put any chemicals in cookies.
Right.
And so those would be, if I wasn't making cookies, those would be the only cookies like that I would buy.
Okay, gotcha.
So this book gave you all of this inside recipes, you know, how to, you know, a can and, you know, it was just this, it was, the book is so worn and now I have it in my, it's not here. It's, I think it's in my storage unit. When I moved, I had to put all my books in there. So that started the whole, kind of the non-toxic living. And I felt that the cleaning products were some of the worst things that we could use. This book also addressed that things like that were popular at the time, like scrubbing bubbles.
Yeah.
And you know, how great is that, that they have like the little cartoon, you know, figure.
I know.
You know, go around and you know, kids see that. They, buy that, you know.
Yeah.
And all of the things, so many. One of the ones that's still out that claims to be totally green is Simple Green.
I know.
Which is not. It's not Simple Green at all.
There's a lot. I'm glad that you're talking about that and sharing about how the marketing markets towards children and families, because there's so much greenwashing, and some people who may be listening might not even be aware of what greenwashing is. It's like when a company brands itself as being all natural and clean and green, but they really have chemicals that are in them that are not safe and or tested. And that was one of the first things that I was so drawn to with Annie's, was because I had gotten rid of all of the toxic cleaning things in our house. I would kind of just did like a purge. I was like, I was always super sensitive to smells and chemicals, and I would get horrible headaches. And I also had asthma as a child. And so I wanted to ensure that I'm using things that are safe in our home for myself, for the dogs, and then for Lula. But I started using Annie's before I was even pregnant, I think.
Before you were married, I think.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
I mean, I met you at the SOA.
Yeah, years ago.
Years, yeah. I think it's so important that people really pay attention to what they're reading on Instagram and Facebook, which is now, I mean, even television, not so much television anymore, because I don't really see too many of the ads for the things I see more on Instagram and Facebook. So things to be careful. Mrs. Meyers is not a natural product.
Oh my gosh, I know.
It's not, and you have all these women and this group called Grove Collaborative, and they do these these giveaways and all of these things. And every time I see the group doing a giveaway, I jump in and say, "Hey, gals, this is not an all-natural product. You need to read the label."
Right.
And then I've done that maybe four or five times. Now I'm banned from the group, so I can't jump in.
It's really difficult. We're in like a really difficult time, especially with social media, where we're just trying to help people by sharing information and by suggesting that they like read and research things to make sure that these things are actually safe or actually true. And so it can be incredibly frustrating, especially like what you said, when you're trying to help somebody, you're trying to pass on this knowledge, and then you get kicked out for it. It's just
get kicked out. Yeah. And I offered everyone in that group a bottle or a sample.
Yeah.
Try. The thing with the Mrs. Meyers that really is disturbing to me is that there is no Mrs. Meyers.
I know.
There's no a woman making her product, and all of her what they call their essential oils are all artificial.
Right.
So when people tell me, "Oh, but I love the smell of her say lavender."
I know.
Even if she has one. I would say, "Have you smelled lavender before?"
Right.
Because it doesn't smell anything like that lavender.
Right.
Or if you smell peppermint, and you know, so that's what people really should go back. Method is one of the worst.
Oh my gosh, I know.
People use it all the time. Now, Method's claim to fame is that they have a green building.
Right.
So they're not saying their product is green, but people assume that it is because it's in. But they have all sorts of chemicals in their product. And I'm just amazed. There are so many other products out there that you can buy or make yourself.
Right.
That don't have these. And the other thing too that really irritates me, do you think Method or Mrs. Meyers really gives two hoots about you?
I know. Go ahead.
Yeah, that they really care. Do you see, like, they ever gone to their Instagram pages, and do they ever talk about the environment or their packaging or what their sustainability is and all of these things? And to back up on Mrs. Meyers a little bit, is that she was just a company that never made any money until it was sold.
Yeah.
So how these companies work, and I think people don't realize how a company works. A startup company like Mrs. Meyers, you know, for 10 years, just got, you know, hundreds of investors to just keep plugging out the product. And then when they sold it for $9 billion, that's how it works.
Right.
So for someone, people will be, they'll really like hold true to their products. And I'm like, I don't know why.
Yeah.
They don't care about you.
I know, and I'm glad that you mentioned that, because that's something that just like weighs on me all the time, is just that the idea that we live in a society that is so profit driven, it's profit over people in like every regard, except for there are companies like you and people like me who like genuinely truly care about people, and this is why we're coming together to talk about these things, because these things matter so much. And I think that, or I hope that everyone who's listening along will start to like really look at things and really like, if you're going to be using something on your body, if you're going to be using it in your home, with your children, with your family, with your friends, anything, like I just really hope that people will slow down and be like, hey, is this really safe? Like, is this really something that is going to be okay to be breathing in when we're inside of our homes?
And COVID, you know, the whole coronavirus has just made people crazy and made it worse.
Yeah.
And I did post the other day about spraying your baby's high chair. And what are you using to spray your baby's high chair? And I'm like, would you spray your dinner dish with a disinfectant and then put food on it?
Right.
No. So it's the same thing with a high chair. Top, you know, if you're not using a little or something. And it really drives me crazy. It really drives me crazy.
I know. And I think that all we can do is keep talking about these things and continue to plant seeds. And one day people will hopefully just start listening and taking the initiative to do it themselves.
And you don't have to use a sledgehammer when a hammer will do. You know?
Right.
You don't need, you know, the really toxic cleaners. I mean, in the motel in New Hampshire, we were given this disinfectant to try. And I looked up all of the
ingredients.
It needed to be dropped off at a toxic waste dump.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to clean, you know, our rooms with it. And no, we found another solution.
But,
yeah. No, I just was like, you can have that, you know,
you can take
that back. We don't want that.
Yes.
But I think where the product actually was developed was my grandmother's use of vinegar all the time.
Oh, yes. Okay. I remember you saying that.
So she, when I was growing up, it seemed my mother was really sick a lot when we were little. And one of the reasons was she had a tubal pregnancy, and that really kind of put her out for a little while. So my grandmother would come and stay with us, and she was very tidy. I used to love when she was there because she was so tidy and clean. And I grew up in a small house with a lot of people, so. And you would always smell the vinegar in the house, which I loved the smell of it. I know some people don't like it, but when I smell it, I automatically think of clean.
Yeah.
You know, clean. And so she came over here and worked as a domestic worker. They used to call them servants, but a domestic worker in 1917. So she was using vinegar for years and years and years and years. And then she started to put lemon in it and just, you know, squeeze the lemon and stir it up and then put her rags in it and you know, clean that way. So that's really where I developed. I just went a little bit further.
And it's amazing. I'm glad that you're talking about it and talking about, like, your grandmother was alive however many years ago. Like, this is not something that's just like brand new, and you're talking about utilizing like a book from like the 1980s. And there are a lot of books that are like way ahead of their time in regards to like health and holistic health and paying attention to that and taking care of your body. And so I just feel like we've had such a well-rounded conversation about motherhood and breastfeeding and your own experience and food and all these natural holistic options that people have. So I'm just really thankful for this conversation. And I'm thankful that you have created a product that I can use in my home and share with other people.
Yes. And I'm glad that you use it.
Okay. I use it for everything.
You can use it as an air freshener too. You
know? I know, I do. I've done it. I do it with on the dog beds. And yeah. they don't mind it. They seem to like it. So
yeah, I love it too. And you know, lavender is good in a baby's room.
Right.
You know, to spray on the crib rails or whatever. And you know what too? You can also use it to clean fruit.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's the thing. That's the thing really is that a lot of people don't realize is like this is how gentle this product is, but it's also like you can use it in that regard to clean fruit and vegetables, but then you could also use it to clean things that you really need help cleaning.
You just need one thing.
Right.
You just need one thing to clean. I mean, you know, 100 years ago, they didn't have 25 items.
Right.
You cleaned, you know, you had one thing that worked and
right.
that's what you used. And I think that's what people, I think people are led by the, you know, social media and advertising and, you know, it's just like the Oreo cookies.
Right. It's a bit where there are a lot of, there's too much, I don't know, focus on like consumption when we really don't need those many things. Like we can have one product that works for everything.
Yeah. I have one product I have two products under my sink. One is Barkeeper's Friend.
Oh, I have that too.
Yeah, and that's very good because I use that on my cooktop.
Yep.
My glass cooktop, because sometimes it just gets like really, I don't know, black. So I scrape a little scraper. And the antiperspirant Simple. And then I have some microfiber cloths. And if the things don't do it, then, you know, it's going to stay dirty.
Oh, man. Well, I've so enjoyed our conversation today, and I'm so excited to share this with everybody. So thank you so much, Annie, for coming on and for this beautiful conversation.
Thank you so much.
All right, listeners. Well, if you guys enjoyed this episode, please let us know. Leave a review. Reach out to us. We are more than happy to answer any questions. Oh, Annie. Can you please share with everybody where they can find you? I'm sorry, I forgot that.
So they can find me in Whole Foods and Roach Brothers and many of our little stores that we just love, our little shops, Hingham Fruit Center, Milton Marketplace. If you go to our website, which is just anniesparentsimple.com, there's a list of stores.
Perfect.
And all really, anybody that's listening today, I'd be more than happy to send them a bottle.
Oh, wow. That's so exciting. So yeah, if you guys have listened today and you are interested in trying some Annie's, please reach out to myself or Annie and we will get you over a sample.
Sure. I would love to. They'll get a full bottle. I won't even give them a sample.
Oh, wow. Look at, she is up in the game for you guys. Well, thank you so much, listeners. Please let us know what you think of this episode. If it resonates with you or resonates with anybody else, please share it. And we will be back next week. Bye-bye.